everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, this is going to be a weird year when it goes into the record books. And I know we've got another month or so with the monsoon, but we've had a paltry 2 inches officially for the monsoon at the Tucson International Airport. And like, if this was the end of the monsoon, which it isn't, but it'd go into the record books as one of the lowest producing rainfall summer seasons. But up at our place, I'm guessing 7 or 8 inches. So
there have been a number of places here around the metro and extended areas around in the last, what, 2-3 nights?
Yes.
We've been getting showers here and there. And so a lot of them are getting more than the airport has been getting.
Oh, no kidding. And look at the Rito. I guess it was running pretty much bank to bank at one point this morning. So it's a strange year, but I guess you could say that. Every summer rainy season, because it could rain across the street and not rain at your place. It's the Buckmaster Show. It's Thursday, the 11th of August, 2022. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our studio, named for green things, Zocalo Village, the radio station 1030, KVOI, K-Voice, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website. It's very easy to use. You can find any show we've done, pretty much any show. I'd say 99% of the shows are at buckmastershow.com since we started the project in January of 2011. Let's go now on the live line. Pima County Supervisor, Democrat, representing the 1st Supervisorial District. There are 5 seats on the Board of Supervisors. Rex Scott is with us. Rex, how are you?
Bill, doing great. Always a pleasure to be with you, Tom, and your listeners. Thanks for the opportunity.
Were you able to get away to carve out some kind of a summer vacation, Rex Scott?
Bill, I was not, because we moved into a new home near the end of the spring, and we've really been focused on getting that home the way we want it. And so we have put off our travels until this fall, but I've got a trip planned to the Pacific Northwest in September to see our son. And then my wife and I are going to visit family in Ohio and Kentucky in October. And we also have some concerts planned. We're going to see Elton John up in Phoenix and Gordon Lightfoot here in Tucson. So the other thing I'll tell you is that our new home is right next door to Sabino Canyon. So when you've got that wonderful mecca for hiking and walking and running right next door, you don't have the yen to travel that you might otherwise.
Well, you've got a couple of trips planned, and it's perfect. After Labor Day, the kids are back in school. It's hopefully won't be as hectic in the airports. I know we're planning to get away the week before Labor Day over to the central Oregon coast. Done the southern coast and the northern, and like to check out the whole Oregon coast. So it's a good time of year to get away. The certification of the official election results that was done, this was a special meeting that the board rarely ever meets on a Monday, but did this week, didn't it?
Well, no, we're meeting this coming Monday.
Oh, though. Excuse me. All right. And that's to certify the election results. I'm sorry, I got my weeks screwed up there. So what are you hearing about how the election went?
Well, Bill, the first thing I want to say is how grateful I am to our hardworking staff in both the elections division and the recorder's office. My colleagues and I voted to put the vote center model in place, and there were 129 vote centers up and running on primary election day for people who chose to vote in person. And they could vote at any one of those 129 vote centers. We also became the final Arizona county to use e-poll books to check voters in. and to verify their status, we had been using paper to do that kind of checking in years past. But it's one thing to vote to put those things in place to make voting more accessible and convenient and secure for our voters, but then it's staff that actually has to do that work. And so I'm very grateful to the staff and the volunteers that we had that helped make primary election day a success for the entire electorate.
Rex Scott, let's talk about guns and restricting gun use. You and your colleagues voted 3-2, you joining with the majority, because this is something you're calling for, and you are calling along with your two other colleagues who voted yes on the Arizona legislature to repeal a law that bars local governments from adopting rules restricting gun use and directing the Pima County Attorney's Office to assess a potential legal challenge. Where is this coming from, Rex?
Well, Bill, the statute that we're referring to, which is Arizona Revised Statute 13-3108, is part of a national strategy by the National Rifle Association and their allies to use state laws to prevent local governments from taking any kind of reasonable action to deal with gun safety and gun violence. The United States leads the world in every frightening statistic related to guns, and yet the Arizona legislature, like many of their counterparts in the other 50 states, precludes local governments from taking any kind of reasonable action to protect their constituents. And in Arizona, that is particularly offensive on the part of state government, because state law also calls for counties to be the public health authorities for their regions. And so all the resolution calls for is the legislature and the governor, the new legislature and governor that we'll have in January, to get rid of this statute and allow local governments to take action to address gun safety and gun violence. And it calls on the county attorney to present the board with legal options for challenging this statute if the legislature and governor don't take that step. And we've been hearing from people in the legal community from around the country and in the gun safety community also from around the country, who are just as concerned with this law as we are and who are going to lend their support to the county as we take this on, both politically and legally if we have to.
Board Chair Sharon Bronson said at that meeting where the 3-2 motion actually passed, Sharon voted against the motion. She said that the actions against gun violence need to start with the federal government.
Well, I have a great deal of respect for the board chair and her perspective on this issue. I think if she and I were to have a discussion about measures to address gun safety and gun violence, we would have a lot of common ground. But again, in Arizona, counties are the public health authority for their regions. And so it's very appropriate for counties to consider measures to protect public health and safety, including in terms of measures that can address gun violence. And we're not talking about anything that would be intrusive to the rights of sportsmen or hunters or law-abiding gun owners. In fact, we're not talking about any particular legislation at all at this point. What we're talking about is the state legislature removing this barrier from local governments that want to take appropriate action to protect their citizens.
What about gun shows, the gun shows that specifically at the Pima County Fairgrounds?
And thank you for asking that question, Bill, because that was certainly a source of concern for people in the community and for members of the board. Currently, the fairgrounds is overseen by a nonprofit commission that is appointed by the board. They have contracted with a gun show promoter to have gun shows out at the fairgrounds a couple of times a year. And this particular promoter allows private sellers who do not have federal firearms licenses, therefore they don't have to conduct background checks of buyers of guns at these gun shows. That's what's often referred to as the gun show loophole. When we sought to either direct the commission to only allow sales at these gun shows by people who have federal firearms licenses, or for the commission to actually make that decision themselves, what we were advised by the county attorney is that for either the board or the commission to take that action could run afoul of this statute.
You had an op-ed in the Arizona Daily Star talking about that this really stems from what you saw as an educator. Would you like to share with our listeners a bit about that?
Well, Bill, I worked in our Pima County schools for almost 30 years, and there were a couple of occasions when I was an administrator that I had to join with my staffs and put schools into lockdown because there was a report of a student on campus who allegedly had a gun. Thank God in neither of those instances was anybody hurt or killed, but I will never forget the looks on the faces of my students and their colleagues during a time of such tremendous uncertainty. And then even more sadly, there were a number of funerals that I went to over the years of students who had died as a result of gun violence. They had been shot and killed, or they had tragically taken their own lives. And a tremendous number, in fact, I think it's the majority of gun deaths in this country are by suicide. So when we are looking at the issue of gun violence, it's not just violence against another person. It's also these tragic acts of suicide. And teenagers are extraordinarily impulsive and are less likely to think through the consequences of their actions than adults. So, yeah, certainly having had those experiences as an educator helps to inform my views as an elected official.
All right, we're going to pause right here. Rex Scott, Pima County Supervisor, is with us on our live line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. If you agree or you disagree with the supervisor, love to hear from you. Our live line number is 790-2040, 790-2040, and we will take a break right here and be back on the Thursday edition of the Bill Buckmaster radio program. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our Friday Focus interview tomorrow. Tim Tomier will be with us. Tim, the assistant Tucson City manager, and a lot to talk about with Tim. But right now we're on the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott is with us. Currently, there are no marijuana dispensaries, off-site grow, or production facilities in the unincorporated Pima County, but that's about to change. Pima County has revised its strict marijuana zoning rules. The vote was 3-2. How did you vote on this matter, Supervisor?
Well, I was on the losing side of this vote, Bill, but it requires a little bit of explanation. What we were presented with was two recommendations. The recommendation of our professional staff in the Development Services Department was that these dispensaries be allowed in commercial and business zone, commercial and industrial zones, where any such retail business would ordinarily be allowed. The Planning and Zoning Commission, by a divided vote, recommended that we go with staff's recommendations, but also include what's known as a conditional use permit, a tier three conditional use permit. That requires an additional hearing before the Planning and Zoning Commission and the Board of Supervisors before any such business can be allowed to operate. And I voted with professional staff's recommendation and to not go with what the Planning and Zoning Commission was recommending, because what that's going to mean for these business owners is additional time, additional cost, and the potential loss of the real estate that they are planning to locate these dispensaries in. And by the way, the only dispensaries that are affected by this are the ones that are granted to what are known as social equity license holders. These are 26 people who went through a process that was led by the Arizona Department of Health Services. They had to be people who were somehow impacted by the war on drugs and had to meet some other criteria before they could be granted one of these licenses. It was a competitive process. And if they don't get their dispensary open within 18 months, they lose their license, and the license itself is actually eliminated. So I felt that professional staff's recommendation was what was most fair and just in this situation for these social equity license holders. But the majority of the board agreed with the Planning and Zoning Commission, so we will be going through this conditional use permit process for any of these license holders.
All right, let's go to our live line. Mike has a question for Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott. Go ahead, Mike. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi. It's obvious you want to disarm all citizens. So I wonder if you had any comments about the law-abiding citizen in Indiana who took down the criminal who was shooting people at the mall. So I guess that's not okay either. So you don't want just IRS agents to have guns. Is that correct?
No, absolutely not, Mike. I appreciate the question, but all our resolution calls for is for the state of Arizona to repeal this statute that prohibits local governments from taking any kind of action dealing with guns. It really is, more than anything, a call for both respect for local control and common sense. And we certainly wouldn't, if we were given this authority, Mike, we certainly wouldn't take any action that would abridge the rights of law-abiding gun owners.
Getting back to the marijuana question, philosophically, did you have any problem with these dispensaries in unincorporated Pima County, Supervisor Scott?
No, I didn't. And the reason I didn't is because 63% of the Pima County electorate voted to decriminalize the recreational use of marijuana. And again, the only people who are affected by this additional bureaucratic process are these social equity license holders. And I think that we have forced upon them additional time, additional cost, additional burden. And I don't think that was fair and just. That was why I was supportive of the recommendations that were made to the board by professional staff.
You have joined with 18 other Arizonans. Many of them have connections to Southern Arizona for this this particular group known as Save Democracy, which folks with Save Democracy believe that primary elections divide citizens, discriminate against unaffiliated voters and candidates, and prevent common sense bipartisan legislation. Do you think it's a good idea to change our primary system in Arizona?
It's an essential idea, Bill. If we're going to get the participation in the political process and ultimately the legislative process that we want to see, just as an example, in last Tuesday's primaries, really only, I think it was right around 10% of the entire Arizona electorate made the decision as to who was going to move forward to the general election in the fall for all of these important offices, governor, attorney general, United States senator, all the way down the ballot. And what Save Democracy AZ is calling for is nonpartisan primaries that lead to ranked choice voting in the general. So what you would have, and you can see systems like this in other states such as Alaska and California, what you would have is everybody participating, everybody allowed to participate in the August primaries. And you wouldn't have to, if you were an independent, request a particular ballot, which is the process right now. What would happen then is that the top four or five people who finished would move into the general election, and then there would be ranked choice voting in the general election, where you would rank those five people from one to five, and obviously the person who you ranked first would have greater weight than the person who you ranked fifth. But what ranked choice voting coupled with nonpartisan primaries leads to is elected officials who truly are representative of their communities, who are more likely to be supported by a majority of the people in their state or district. And I'd really recommend a book called titled The Politics Industry by Catherine Gehl, G-E-H-L, and Michael Porter, which speaks to how these systems have worked in other states, how they can work in states like Arizona, and how they really need to be adopted nationwide if we're going to have the kind of participation that we want in our elected system by everybody. And I know that the people in my party, leaders in the Democratic Party, as well as leaders in the Republican Party, are opposed to many of these reforms. But with the fastest growing segment of the electorate being independents and the low levels of participation that we have in elections by voters across the board, we need reforms to our system of elections. And this book really does a great job of outlining them.
So few people do participate in the primaries, don't they?
That's true. Yeah, as I said, it was really just around 10% of the total Arizona electorate. Because if you're an independent, and there are more independents in Arizona than Democrats. Republicans lead in registration, independents are second, Democrats are third. If you're an independent in Arizona, you have to request a particular ballot. You have to go to the trouble of doing that. And just to make matters even more confusing, every 4 years when we have the presidential preference, it's not a primary, it's a presidential preference election, but they don't call it a primary, independents can't vote in those elections. So just further confusion for voters.
Thank you very much, Supervisor Rex Scott. Have a great day. Thanks.
You too, Bill. My pleasure.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. Stop by Green Things. If you're looking for, you know, it was a real tough winter and spring, virtually no rain. Now we're getting good rain. So this would be at least good rain everywhere but the Tucson International Airport. But this would be a great time to go by Green Things and put some color in the garden. They're at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. It's a beautiful 13-acre site, everything you need for your garden. Their website, greenthingsaz.com. They're open daily. They're in there, over 50 years in the business. I think it's their 52nd year exactly that they've been offering wonderful services with their nursery and beautiful garden accessories. Zocalo Village, great things over there. On-site, beautiful Talavera pottery from Mexico. ZocaloVillage.com is the website there. Let's welcome now Dr. Jeff Silvertooth. Dr. Silvertooth is professor and extension specialist in agronomy and soil science in the Department of Environmental Science at the University of Arizona. He served on the University of Arizona faculty and worked statewide. Since 1987, Dr. Silvertooth has been recognized as a fellow for both the American Society of Agronomy and Soil Science Society of America. Dr. Silvertooth, how are you?
Very good, Bill. Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much. Were you able to carve out a little bit of vacation?
I did back in June. Since then, I've been back in state peddling away, but not too hard. But I had some good time in June, Bill. Thank you.
The big story, of course, is the ongoing talks over the Colorado River. Is the ag community in Arizona unified with one voice on this?
I can't say they're absolutely unified and say they're coming together. I do know this also, that there's a coalition of ag districts along the main stem of the Colorado River, and those are the ones that are probably most directly affected by the shortages on the Colorado River beyond the irrigation districts in central Arizona, which have already been cut 512,000 acre feet during this calendar year because the dam levels at Lake Mead, water levels had dropped to 1,075 feet. And last year this time, the Bureau had made an announcement they were going into Tier 1 reduction. So they've already been reduced from the shortages that we see today. The districts along the main stem of the Colorado River are probably most at jeopardy. And they have formed a coalition, amazingly, since the middle of June when the Commissioner of the Bureau of Reclamation came out and made the announcement that the Bureau was going to be making this reduction of 2 to 4 million acre feet on the Colorado River. And to put that in context, the total budget on the Colorado River is 16.5 million acre feet. And the Bureau has recognized those reservoirs, Lake Mead and Powell, have been dropping so much that they have to take immediate action. And so she gave everybody 60 days to come up with a plan. And this ag coalition was formed along the Colorado River to form their united, say, front or their recommendation to the larger plan that will be put together by Arizona and the other basin states, which is quite a monumental task in 60 days.
So the 60 days is quickly running out.
Yeah, next week. We have less than a week
left.
So
what happens then?
Well, it's right on schedule, but it'll right on schedule with what the commissioner had said in June. And every year, the Bureau of Reclamation comes out with their operational plan for the next year. Mm-hmm. So next week on that schedule, and consistent with what the commissioner said in June, they'll come out with their operational plan for 2023 on the Colorado River. And we expect to see reductions of 2 to 4 million acre feet and that from the broader budget of 16.5. Now, that's reasonable in relation to the fact that since 2000, the average flow down that Colorado River has only been 12.3 million acre feet. So that's what's contributed to our drawdown on those reservoirs, is just a lot less water going into those reservoirs than we're taking out. And we have to get that in balance with what Mother Nature is dictating.
So everybody, who has a seat at the table here?
All the basin states. And each basin state, so in our state, that would be, for example, the director of the Department of Water Resources, Tom Ushesky. He's definitely principally involved representing state of Arizona. I believe also, too, the CAP, the Central Arizona Project, has representation there, rightfully so, since they take water straight off the Colorado River. And that's probably Mr. Ted Cook, who's involved in that, but people like that, and they're good. They're good professionals. They're in the business all the time, but I think each state has a delegation that's associated with this, and that's, of course, seven states in the basin, upper basin, lower basin, and Mexico are all part of this, and they've got to come together with a plan pretty fast, or the Bureau decides for them.
14 tribal governments, including 8 in Arizona, have been invited to the talks?
Yeah, there are over 30 tribes that have water rights associated with the Colorado River. And I know all the Indian tribes are going to be, should be involved. And that they do so in various ways, you know.
And the city of Tucson, what's its role?
The city of Tucson takes CAP water. We're the end of the line on the CAP, the Central Arizona Project. It lifts water from the Colorado River near the confluence of the Bill Williams River into the Colorado, and the CAP pulls water out of there and lifts it about 2,600 feet across this desert and basically follows I-10 essentially kind of mm-hmm. out of the desert on the west, goes through Phoenix, Central Arizona, ends up here right out in the Abra Valley. And what Tucson's been doing the past, I don't know, several decades has been putting some of that water into the recharge basins in the Abra Valley.
Which is a good thing.
Which is a good thing. Yeah. And then also, too, they've been pulling on some of that CAP water into the city water supply. And I forget the exact mm-hmm. proportions, how they do that. But what my understanding is, and I don't know what's actually transpired from this, but my understanding is the city of Tucson has volunteered to say, well, with the shortage, keeping in mind you've got to cut 2 to 4 million acre feet out of this river budget, and Tucson gets some of the water coming through the CAP, that they've said, well, we'll forego our allocation for now in hopes that things get better, and that'll help with the river recovery. And I forget exactly what that total is that Tucson gets, but I think it's like 1.5 million acre feet total that goes in the CAP. That's total. So it'd be a contribution, and I'm sure what the city's thinking to do then was go back out of those recharge basins.
And we'll be able to clarify these specific numbers tomorrow with Tim Tomier. We'll be here. Tim's the former head of Tucson Water, now mm-hmm. kind of the go-to guy in the city of Tucson. He's number two to Mike Ortega, and he really knows right. so much right. about water. We'll right. get the specifics from him tomorrow.
That's right. That'd be good. He'd be a good source for that. Excellent.
So many ask, when the rains come in the summer and some areas of town have had great rain, others not so much, what does that do to the groundwater basin, Jeff?
Well, it helps. It helps, no doubt about it. And probably the biggest benefit we have is just for the surface environment. The
greening things
absolutely,
up, right?
Absolutely. The desert, you know, the greening up of the desert, the wildlife, the plants, the flora and the fauna both benefit tremendously. I'm heading out this afternoon to southeast Arizona after we finish here. And I know just basically from where we're sitting here in Tucson, east of here all the way into New Mexico, the lands are lush right now. You know, the rains have been consistent, mm-hmm. and they've been pretty good. So the landscape is really recovering. In terms of your question about what does it do to the groundwater, it's a help. It's uh-huh. a help, you know, and you have some of the streams running, like the Rito, the Pantano's been running. There's probably some water in the Santa Cruz. You know, that always helps with groundwater. But, you know, what we're talking about is a groundwater basin that is so huge that when you are putting some water in from a rains like this, they contribute. They're positive, yes, but they're not highly significant just because of the volumes we're talking about in terms of in scale.
Mm-hmm. And does it help the farmers?
It helps the farmers in terms of, again, short-term relief. Mm-hmm. You know, the farmers that depend on well water, like down in Cochise County, there's places there where these rains really help them. And I know some of those farmers, their wells will recharge with mm-hmm. a good mm-hmm. monsoon season mm-hmm. pretty well. Other parts of the valleys down there, like the Sulphur Springs Valley, the hydrology is such that they don't recharge real well. It takes a long time to do so. And the farmers out there in most parts of the state, they benefit from the fact that there's a shift in weather. And sometimes, mm-hmm. to be honest with you, when it rains and some of these crops, summer crops out here, it's more trouble than it is.
Well, that was my question for you. Jeff, what's the sweet spot for like a crop like cotton?
I tell you what, cotton actually does best in a real dry environment.
That's why
it grows well here. Yeah. You know what we see when cotton is growing out here and you get to monsoon season that comes in, temperatures rise at night. Mm-hmm. Higher night temperatures. We sometimes have that combined with high daytime temperatures that are mm-hmm. sometimes short-lived, and then the cloud cover comes in. What that does, though, it increases a canopy. It temperatures in the crop canopy. It's not able to cool itself as well, just like our swamp coolers don't work
right.
as well. And that creates some physiological stresses on the plant. It loses fruit. And so this, better remember, a cotton plant is a perennial plant that we grow mm-hmm. as an annual. Same thing happens with tomatoes and peppers and things like that. But they're perennial plants, and when they sense a stress, if they think They basically sacrifice their fruit, their young, for can protect themselves. And mm-hmm. we'll just reproduce another year, another time. This is mm-hmm. not an opportune time. So that's what we see a lot of times. Right now, the fruit retention is holding on pretty good with these crops out here. I'll be down in southeast Arizona today. Of course, that's 4,500 feet elevation.
And what are they growing down there?
Mostly what I'm dealing with is chilies.
Wow.
New Mexico type chilies. Mm-hmm. And they do pretty well as long as we don't have too much, and then they get diseases.
Yeah.
You know, it's always a flying edge, you know, with this kind of with weather in agriculture. But yeah, that's the problem we have in southeast Arizona on the other end. It's possibly too damp of conditions that can be conducive to some of the diseases. And chilies are really susceptible.
And Hatch, New Mexico, claims to be the chili capital of the world.
Yes, sir. They do a great job. But I'll tell you, the truth of it is, Arizona is a seed company, chili seed company in mm-hmm. southeast Arizona, provides about 95% or more of the seed that supports the green chili industry in New Mexico. That's one of our little secrets in Arizona.
Yeah, that is. Jeff Silvertooth, stick around. We're going to take a break here. It's the Buckmaster Show, Thursday edition. We'll be back with Jeff. And if you have a question for Dr. Silvertooth, 790-2040. 790-2040. We will be right back.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, one of our great sponsors. They're all great. I only have sponsors on the show that I know something about and can endorse. And one of them, Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It's a great drive over there. And as Jeff Silvertooth is with me in studio, was just talking about how green it is over in southeast Arizona. So on your way to Silver City, things have really greened up. You know, you take that left turn off I-10 at Lordsburg, head up the mountain to Silver City, and you're going to really love the way the Gila National Wilderness is looking these days. So this would be a great weekend to take a road trip. It's their temperatures, around 60 for the overnight low and low 80s. That's cool compared to Tucson. So we always like to say it's 10 degrees cooler over in Silver City, but in some cases it could be 15 to 20 degrees cooler, and that's because of the elevation over there. You can find out more at southwestnewmexico.org. Start your planning now. Jeff Silvertooth is with us, professor and extension specialist in agronomy and soil science in the Department of Environmental Science at the University of Arizona. Jeff is our contributor on the Buckmaster Show on agriculture. He's with us. We're trying to bring him in now once a month. He's such a great interviewee because he knows so much about so many things, including the United States poised to deliver a bumper wheat crop. And Jeff, the world badly needs this with what's been going on in the Ukraine.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Remember, the Ukraine and Russia together represent one-third of the normal world export supply. And so with some of that grain being off the market, that's been a real concern and question. So yes, indeed, having a good crop, a good wheat crop in the United States this year really helps. It comes in a good time for the farmers, too. And I understand the spring wheat, what we're talking about there, what we've already experienced is the harvest of the winter wheat, winter wheat crop in the United States. And they're just the beginning, as I understand, now harvesting the spring wheat crop.
Which is kind of, I understand, prized for its high protein content. It's used to make pizza crusts, bagels, other foods. So this is kind of the big one of the crop, of the wheat crop.
It is a big one. They all are. Hard red winter wheats goes into most of our breads and bread type products directly. So it's a major requirement around the world in the wheat market. The spring wheats have a tendency to have more of the soft wheats, and they have different milling purposes. A good example of that is the durum wheat that we grow in Arizona. That's actually used for pasta production. It's a good example of that, a softer grain, a grain that's conducive for that kind of milling. And the spring wheats generally have a lot more applications in that direction of the milling industry.
So the pasta we get from Italy may actually have had its origins in Arizona.
Yeah, probably has.
That's weird.
Southwest Arizona and Central Arizona produces most of the grain that goes into Italian pasta.
Wow.
So literally, we send it to Long Beach, ship it over to Italy, they mill it, turn it into pasta, and then send it back and sell us Italian pasta.
David has taken up my offer to call us at 790-2040, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. David, I understand you have a way to save our water. What is that? Hey, David. Tom, do we have David there still with us? David, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, you're with us.
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead, David. What would you like to tell Dr. Silvertooth and our listeners?
Well, three things we need to do to save our water. Number one, we need to put a cap on population growth. The population is growing too fast. People require large amounts of water. I don't know if you realize, but they approved Douglas Ranch, one development, 100,000 homes. Can you imagine how much water that's going to require? And that's only one of more than 2,000 giant mega developments around Phoenix. This has got to stop. Number two, we got to switch from the high water use crops like the alfalfa and cotton to low water use crops like wayuli and jojoba. And if they do it right, they can catch the market for this. Right now, we import all our plant oils from palm oil from Malaysia. We start producing jojoba in a big way. We undercut the palm oil business and we seize the market. And then we start exporting jojoba oil rather than importing palm oil. Helps our balance of trade. It saves our water. Same way with wayuli. We undercut the rubber market of wayuli. We start producing our own rubber from wayuli.
Okay. I think he had three, but the two will probably take enough time for us, Jeff. The first is about growth, and then the second about the high water use crops. Go ahead.
Right. Well, David, those are both good points. And I appreciate you bringing them up for us here today to include in the discussion. So the first part, you know, with regard to urbanization and further growth, I think we have something like now 7.4 million people in Arizona. And of course, I've been here 35 years, and it's more than doubled in the time I've been here. Projections are that we'll have possibly 10 million people in this state, based on the current projections, by the middle part of this century. So your points are very well taken. You know, the other part of that too, David, they really, the two points segue in nicely together, and that is the use of lower water use crops. I tell you what we need to, with both of those things, we're going to have to live in some degree of harmony with urban development and agriculture. And of course, as an agriculturalist, I have a bias, and I'm certainly here to help us try to support a viable agricultural industry. And what is that? How do we describe that? It's up to debate and some question. We'll find out. But the fact of the matter is, as much as you and I may have reservations about it, I think Arizona is going to continue to grow. The economic development associated with that, I think the political powers that be, as I look across the landscape, in my view, David, I have a tendency to agree with you a lot of times, coming from rural and working in rural areas, but I think it's inevitable, it's happening. The question is, how do we do it in balance? And we surely don't want to be making developments that are based on water that's on paper. It has to be real, what we call wet water. There's been a lot of that. We have ourselves overextended right now because of a lot of that across the state. Second part you have there that's actually tremendous open discussion is like the crop choice. We grow crops like cotton, alfalfa, corn, are considered, as a lot of times people say, these water-sucking crops. So they're these crops
that use a lot of water. Yeah, you hear that all the time. Water-sucking crop.
Yeah, it's a derogatory reference to that. The Waiuli, the other crops they're describing, jojoba, they can be grown here. The difference is the crops we grow them for this reason. They're well adapted to the heat. They're well adapted to the environment. They have salt tolerance, which we have to have. They're productive, highly productive, and there's a strong market for them. And in terms of the Waiuli, as a contrast, you look at these other crops that use less water. Well, they have to have a market that's sustainable for a large acreage. And remember, we have close to 1 million acres out here, and the farmers would have to transition to crops that can sustain them on scale. And those crops just have not demonstrated the capacity to do that. We have Waiuli production going in right now, and it's on contracts primarily with the rubber company, with Bridgestone. So they see the potential. If that potential develops economically, that crop could develop economically. But until then, we need crops that actually pay back for the use they have. And then that opens up a whole other, say, a basket of questions in terms of, well, how do we charge for the water we have, and how do we distribute it, et cetera, et cetera. You know, but the farmers are best positioned to make those decisions as to what's the best crop for them to grow. And these suggestions you have are very good suggestions, and they're being considered, have been considered. But every time we have to come back to crop adaptability and the market capacities associated with them.
Yeah, and one word pops out, sustainability.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Absolutely. And balance of how we manage these resources,
yep.
I think.
All right. Always a good discussion with Dr. Jeff Silvertooth. And thanks, David, for a couple of good points. I know Dr. Silvertooth likes those type of questions,
yes,
and he handled it very well. We'll take our break here. That will mean we'll be back in about 23 hours with our Friday roundtable, but that's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Jeff Silvertooth, Tom, engineering and producing on the other side of the glass, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Hope you have a great afternoon.